Fitters, Mr. Gold.
Judge Posner, and may it please the court, on this appeal, Pipe Fitters Local 597 challenges as legally erroneous the district court's holding that the local is liable for a racially hostile environment at a Forster Wheeler constructor's work site. The district court grounded that liability on the conclusions that the local knew or should have known of that racially hostile environment, and that the local's failure to take effective action to report or remedy that environment constituted a violation of the local's duty imposed by Title VII and Section 1981 to take such action. The EEOC, plaintiff appellee here, crystallizes the legal issues on this appeal by stating that there are three independent legal grounds for the district court's holding. The first, according to the EEOC, is that the union violated its affirmative duty to remedy the racially hostile environment. Our view is that there is no such affirmative duty, that Title VII does not create such an affirmative duty, whereas Section 703A1, which deals with employers who are the active party in controlling the workplace, makes it unlawful for the employer to fail or refuse to hire or to discharge any individual or otherwise to discriminate against any individual with respect to his compensation, terms, conditions, or privileges of employment.
How does duty of fair representation enter into, or should enter into, our analysis? That wasn't discussed, was it? Or?
No, this is not a duty of fair representation case. I don't think the EEOC could bring such a case. I don't believe there's any basis for a failure of the duty.
No, but you would concede, wouldn't you, that if your union people discriminated on racial grounds, they would violate the duty of fair representation?
Oh, absolutely. And if, as the Supreme Court held in the Goodman case, if the union followed a different policy on non-racial meritorious grievances or in raising meritorious non-racial grievances, I apologize for misspeaking, and with regard to meritorious racial grievances, forwarding the former and refusing to forward the latter, that would be a violation of both Title VII, Section 703C1, and a breach of the duty of fair representation.
Well, the union did take the initiative to remedy the instance of sexual graffiti. Granted, that was only one instance, but doesn't the union's disparate handling of that incident undercut the notion that the union, you know, is sort of a passive bystander with regard to work conditions other than safety?
I can't believe that one instance shows discrimination against race-based claims.
The union handled sexual graffiti differently. why wouldn't Judge Corp be entitled to find that the union discriminates vis-a-vis racial graffiti? If it had been twice, would that have been different?
Well, the union, to say that a union which raises any single issue and then doesn't raise a racial issue, when it doesn't raise hundreds or of non-racial issues as well as that racial issue.
Give me some examples, please, of the kinds of non-racial that you're thinking of other than sexual graffiti.
I wasn't at this job site, but to say that it was a to say that it was a perfect job site and that there was nothing wrong that could have been raised, we know
there. You said there are hundreds of instances.
Well,
I only want one.
Okay, there were questions about whether. The Port-a-John, this seems to be basically a Port-a-John case, were kept sufficiently clean.
Well, they went in and cleaned it, didn't they?
When there was a complaint. But the union did not initiate a demand that that be corrected, and the we know that the union a business agent went to the work site and met with the men, determined whether they had any complaints, and then where they had complaints.
How many people are at this site?
This was a large construction site, and there were as many as 150 pipe fitters, my understanding.
How many others? How many people use these bathrooms?
I believe that at any given time there may have been several hundred.
So it's not just pipe fitters that are using them?
Nobody
knows who put the graffiti in.
Right.
I understand your situation is your position is that the hostile environment at this workplace is the responsibility of the employer.
Right.
And that the problem here is you think the EEOC has stretched it to also include that same responsibility coterminously with the union. You say you have a much narrower obligation.
Correct.
How many of the 150 pipe fitters are black?
There were, from the findings at least, eight black pipe fitters who were working on this job.
And are they pipe fitters in a literal sense? Or, I mean, what are they? Are they plumbers, or are they were, or are they just
that, that's a very sensitive issue. Pipe fitter is not a plumber. Pipe fitters are the people who do the piping on nuclear plants and other. Complicated refineries.
Oh, I see. So, yeah.
And they're the.
What are they building here?
This was a heating facility of some kind that was being refurbished, is my understanding.
In a generating plant?
Yeah, that kind of thing. And the pipe fitters are the people who in this kind of work handle the pipe that holds these high pressure items. And
Let me ask you a factual question. If Mr. Haney, as the lead pipe fitter, was responsible for seeing that the pipe fitters had proper facilities, and he had the power to decide who would be the foreman for the Robbins project, and he was responsible for laying out the work to be completed by the pipe fitters, why wasn't Judge Kaur free to infer that the union is not a mere passive bystander here?
Well, Mr. Haney's role here is quite unusual and anomalous. He was the agent of the employer insofar as he did hiring, assignments, and so on. He was acting for the employer as the employer's agent and supervisor, and he made that perfectly clear. The employer hired him, the employer paid him, he was a supervisor.
Odd that the National Labor Relations Act would even allow him to be a union member, isn't he?
To say that this is odd and anomalous and is in this one respect is an understatement, and we have a finding of fact by the judge that Mr. Haney acted as an agent of both the employer and the union, and
as I understand it, the employer was found liable for the hostile environment and has paid or settled.
Right. And all I want to say is that Mr. Haney's role for the union was a limited one. His main role was for the employer, and as Judge Posner points out, the whole question of what the National Labor Relations Act says about this dual role is an interesting and substantial one, but not one presented here.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Mr. Gold. Mr. Siner?
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Joe Siner, and I represent the Appellee, the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. There are two separate grounds here for Judge Kaur's decision, and they are the affirmative duty that the my opponent spoke of, as well as the theory of...
Well, that first one seems to me a real loser, because here you have a legal setup in which these employees, or the EEOC is their representative, have a comprehensive remedy against the employer for racial discrimination. And in addition to that, of course, there's the duty of fair representation of the union and its own Title VII duties. So why isn't a sensible regime, these people who are victims of discrimination, they complain to the company. If the company doesn't do anything, they say to their union grievers, you know, the company is violating my rights and you should do something. And then if the grievers refuse, either on discriminatory grounds or just because they're lazy or something, then they have a remedy against the union for violation of duty of fair representation. Why do they have to also have the same Title VII remedy against the union that they have against the company?
Your Honor, as a practical matter, the union here knew about the problem and could have done something about it.
Well, the company obviously could do something about it. And as Judge Mannion's question brought out, it's not just the pipe fitters who are doing this stuff. So,
but there's no reason.
What is this multiplication? What is the gap in the law that's being filled by your position?
Respectfully, Your Honor, the union could have actually just gone to the employer. Perhaps the employer didn't know about what was going on here.
And the employees, of course, can go to their union and say, look, union. The company is not cleaning up these toilets, and so, you know, you tell them. You're our representative. You're our grievers.
But Your Honor, where the union actually knows about it, even in the absence of a complaint, has notice of this racially tinged environment.
What do you mean absence of a complaint? Here are these workers. If they don't care about the graffiti, if this is some contest and who can be more offensive to the other, well, who cares? But assuming they care, the eight or however many black people, Ferguson and the others, if they care about this, they're members of the union, they know about, you know, the responsibilities of the collective bargaining representative, so of course they'd go to their steward and say, look, we don't like this stuff, do something about it. If he doesn't do something about it, then they have an action. Why do you need more than that?
Your Honor, this incident and the racial graffiti would have been prevented if this duty was upon the union. The union steward, Dennis Haney, here testified.
Well, it's been prevented anyway, right?
A year and a half and four EEOC visits later.
What makes you think it would have happened any quicker?
Because Dennis Haney testified that if it had been part of his job description.
Why didn't these workers complain to their union steward?
Why didn't they complain? No. According to the testimony of the expert, according to the lower court's opinion,
weren't they asked whether they had complained to the union?
They believed that if they complained, they would have been punished. And
by whom?
By the union. That the job assignments that they would have gotten wouldn't have been as good, or they might have even been fired. Both two of the pipe fitters specifically testified.
Well, this is, of course, not your affirmative action. This is accusing the union of discrimination. I'm trying to... You want to impose an affirmative duty on a union, even if there are no complaints, to police the workplace for signs of discrimination. So my question is, what's the need for that? Of course, if the union is hostile to these people, it's violating the law. That's not a problem. But you want to go farther, and you want to say, even if the union is perfectly willing to respond to complaints, nevertheless, it has this affirmative duty to be the workplace policeman rather than waiting for its members to complain. And I wonder, what is the gap? Is there a history here?
Well, here,
problem,
Your Honor,
that the EEOC is concerned about?
Here, there's such
I'm talking about this case. There's some abuse that's percolated up.
Well, I guess this case is an excellent example of where that gap takes place, because in this case, the union has such an unusual level of control, as conceded by my opponent in this case.
Claiming the union is biased, now, do you have cases where the union is not biased, but nevertheless you believe that somehow the unions have to have an active investigatory responsibility in order to prevent discrimination?
I'm sorry, what do you mean by bias, Your Honor? I'm biased again.
No, you accuse this union of, you say the workers were afraid to complain to the union because they'd be punished. Well, that suggests the union is hostile either to blacks or to racial claims in general, violating Goodman. That's your second argument.
Right.
But presumably you're making your first argument because the EEOC has some concern, there's some abuse in the workforce somewhere, where because unions don't recognize an affirmative duty, even though they're not biased, somehow discrimination is going unremedied.
Well, we believe that in this particular case, the discrimination was going unremedied, and if this duty would have been imposed upon the union, they conceded that they would have remedied.
No, that's my second argument. This is a bad union, according to you. But you want to impose this affirmative duty on good unions, making them liable, even though they have absolutely no bias, no nothing. They just didn't receive any complaints.
And all that we're simply
asking... You want to make policemen out of them. They have to go investigate stuff.
And all we're asking them to do is just take reasonable action. In this instance, they could have started just by going to the company and saying, hey, look, Foster Wheeler, there's this racial graffiti, there's nooses, there's swastikas. Maybe you should do something about it. And then maybe they'll have to take subsequent steps. But
where are all the other unions?
Where are all the other...
Yeah, why aren't you going after them? How many unions were at this place?
I'm not exactly sure how many unions there were, but...
They're all using the bathroom. Don't they all have the same obligation?
I believe that the testimony at trial showed that the worst graffiti occurred in the pipe fitters' bathrooms. And that was the main reason.
They had bathrooms for pipe fitters and bathrooms for other unions?
There were separate trailers and bathrooms. They're not equal. Anyone could use the bathrooms, but it was mainly used by the pipe fitter union members.
Well, where you state in your brief that the language "or otherwise to discriminate under Section 703A1 includes not permitting a hostile work environment. And you seem to be saying that the union has an obligation not to permit a hostile work environment, which I think is Judge Posner's getting at. That's exactly the obligation of the company.
Right, and we believe
that... Co-terminus?
We believe that because the terms under the statute are the exact same, that a canon of construction would mandate that the liability be the same.
Okay, well, I think that's an important assertion, because others would say the union has a much narrower, not much, but at least significantly narrower. You say it should overlay.
Yeah.
And good unions, bad unions, and in between, they have the same obligation as the employer.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And isn't a big part of your argument the fact that the union did take steps to eliminate the sexual graffiti, and that would tend to belie the notion that it doesn't involve itself in workplace harassment issues?
That's exactly right, Your Honor, and that particularly...
Wait a second. The sexual graffiti, I didn't see anything about it being harassment. I thought Haney, how does he pronounce his name?
I believe it's Haney.
Okay, I thought it was just, Haney's sense of refined, not very refined, but he drew the line there. But I didn't think it had anything to do with harassment.
We're not asserting here. I mean,
he responds to some harassment claims, but not others.
But he specifically recognized an incident of sexual graffiti that was sexual.
No, but he thought. Look, he has this thing. He says this. These are not very refined people. But he has his values, and the sexual graffiti went too far. That's what he said. He thought it might be a little offensive. But it's not because there were female workers there, as far as, right?
Your Honor, I mean, I could read some of the racial graffiti to you, but we would suggest that goes well beyond... I mean, I could read some
of it. No, but the question I thought that Judge Rovner was asking, is there disparate treatment of harassment claims or disparate treatment of discrimination claims? Is Haney just respond to claims of sexual harassment or maybe claims of discrimination against white people? There's no evidence of that.
We would say that it was broader, that it was a disparate treatment.
Well, there's no evidence of that, right? There's no evidence of that.
And we weren't trying to,
the sexual graffiti is not harassment. Okay.
Right. And I guess probably the most important point here on the second argument, the treatment of workplace problems differently, is that nowhere in their brief, and indeed nowhere when my opponent was standing up before you a few minutes ago, are they able to point to even a single incident of where they knew of a workplace problem and without a complaint would remedy it. I mean, on its face, the sexual graffiti shows that they painted over independently without a complaint, demonstrates that they treated workplace problems differently.
Oh, I don't understand how you see that. I don't get that, because Haney clearly is just not taking an interest in this, but, once in a while, something bothers him, so he does that. He doesn't have a practice of not responding to racial harassment. He has no practice. It's all ad hoc.
Your Honor, I would respectfully submit that Goodman doesn't require a practice. It simply requires a showing of...
But are you saying that if the union guy does one intervention, that immediately...
It could, Your Honor.
Obligate the union? That's ridiculous.
Because
it's not impractical. What?
Because if it's important enough,
anything.
Insignificant
it's
enough...
It's not important. This is just a guy who decided he didn't like this particular drawing, so he gets rid of it. He's not making policy for the union by doing that.
In our brief show, there's a number of other incidents in addition
to
that.
He's not even a proper union representative.
Certainly, the judge's ruling could not be clear error based on the other incidents as well, where the union would take action absent a complaint, not just the sexual graffiti. And we would suggest that holding should be affirmed and that it's not clear error in this instance.
When there was a specific complaint, I guess, by Ferguson.
At one point, there was a specific complaint.
And then at some point, they did something not as good as you'd like. Maybe they didn't paint everything, but they did do some sort of remedial effort.
They did something eventually. And
on their own. Does that act make them
I guess, liable in place of, or at least at the same time as the employer? Is that just by saying, yeah, okay, we can do that, and then you say, well, you should do that all the time?
Well, I don't think it necessarily shows that there's any more liability. I think it just demonstrates that they did have an ability here to remedy the situation.
Why isn't this really a fair representation case? Right, you say he represented Ferguson, he did something for Ferguson, he didn't do something for these other people, and he didn't do enough. So why isn't that your complaint?
And that could be, the EEOC doesn't enforce the duty of fair representation.
So what, are you having a fight with the labor board about who goes after unions?
No, Your Honor, but we don't know why Congress, puts this duty under Title VII, but even the Supreme Court has recognized under Goodman that you can't treat workplace problems differently on the basis of race.
And what's so screwy here is that if the labor board were involved, they'd probably say that the company was violating the rule against company unions. So this fellow Hani, with his dual role, seems to violate the National Labor Relations Act.
And certainly, Your Honor, the discrepancy in between the way they were treating things here, I think, goes to the point of Goodman. And
you're saying the EEOC could not initiate a fair representation case?
I think that we probably could as part of...
Part of something else, but as far as specifically, the reason that Closer is asking is that it seems logical.
We don't enforce it.
So what you're doing is you're applying a standard that certainly applies to the company. To the union.
And that's because Title VII mandates that, Your Honor.
That's a broad statement. And it's in your brief, and you've verified it. So I think that clarifies exactly where you're going, and I guess that at least puts the card face up.
Thank you, Your Honor. In summary, the defendant's argument here is that they can avoid liability by simply sticking their head in the sand and ignoring the problems at the workplace. We respectfully request that you affirm Judge Kaur's decision below.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Steiner. Mr. Gold, do you have anything further? 2 minutes.
Two points, if I may. The phrase otherwise discriminate, which the EEOC is relying on to impose this broad affirmative duty on unions, modifies much different language in 703A, which is the employer section, and 703C1, which is the union section. It's the union can't discriminate in on membership matters or otherwise, and that is a discrimination, as the Supreme Court held in treating with membership rights and perquisites, not an obligation to police employer discrimination. Secondly, on the point of whether the union had was guilty of what I'll call a Goodman violation here, the EEOC says that a union cannot, without violating Title VII, have a practice of remedying workplace problems generally and then choose not to address racial issues. There was no practice of remedying workplace problems generally here. That's where they fail on their second or Goodman ground. I should also note that their second or Goodman ground would not support the injunction here, which is that the union has an affirmative obligation to prevent racial harassment at all workplace sites.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. And we'll move on to our next argument, Minch versus Chicago, Ms. Reckman.